Hello, my beautiful beanies, and welcome to The Bean, the weekend edition. First of yesterday's news, I am Glenn ZB. And we are looking back at both Saturday and Sunday, of course. Weekend editions work that way, don't you know? We're going to have to reflect on Trump's appalling behaviour of last week. Andrew Dickens wants to talk about peace and love, apparently, and we'll meet Tim Minchin as well. But before any of that, of course, we do need to pay tribute to the life and times of Sir Colin Meads.
7 minutes to go. The pace is just as fast as when the game began. Meads has the ball. He's a human bulldozer, and he scores in the corner.
I can remember at the time, you know, coming back to a welcome home and that sort of thing and saying, I just don't only want to be an All Black, I want to be a good one.
Gives it to Meads. Meads!
Never to turn anyone down because they are thrilled to, you know, get your autograph and that sort of thing. So you've got to honour that and try and keep it in its right perspective.
And here goes Colin Meads, and will anybody stop him? No, he's out. What a try.
There was a doctor on the sideline when I was there, you know, and I went to the sideline and he examined it and said, oh, I think you've just pinched a nerve. And I thought, well, I'm not going off for a bloody pinched nerve, so...
Meads of New Zealand scored the try, following through. After that ball, Scotland got it. They overwhelmed him, and it was Meads who got the nod. Carlton was there over the top of him too, but it is Meads who got it.
At school, all my schoolboy rugby was as a hooker, so people don't realise that. And it wasn't until I was about 15 and that I really shot up to become too tall for a hooker, put it that way.
Great try to Colin Meads.
I can remember in the early tests, in those tests that I was, if anyone got hurt in the backs, so I had to go out to the wing. And it's always one of the great quiz questions, what position was I playing when I scored my first All Black try? And that was as a winger.
Meads is through on top of him, but it goes to Scotland and he's underneath and there might be a try here for New Zealand. Meads is having a go. It's a try. A try to Meads of New Zealand.
In our days, rucking was only 28 rucks in the 70s in a game. Nowadays, there's 120 rucks and balls because you can't stand on the bastards.
It's going to be very interesting because I have a feeling that Colin Meads may have been ordered off the field.
It was when we went to Japan in 58, there was a big Taranaki contingent in the team. And the Taranaki had this stupid idea, no one was to be called by their first name. And that's how there was Monkey Briscoe, Pasco Brown, Bugle Burke. And I was sitting at breakfast with them, and I think it was Roger Boone said, he looks like Pine Tree. I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. And so the name stuck. And as much as you try and get rid of it, the more it sticks. So I just had to put up with it, and it stuck for the rest of me life.
Great All Black, great man. Let's hear from one of his former teammates, Graham Thorne.
Back in the Blaine day, how did he accept you as this kind of, how do I put this, show pony of All Black rugby?
Interesting you should say that, Tony, because when I was picked for my first All Black trial in Palmerston North, I got on the train with Keith Nelson. We shared a sleeper. I'd never been on a sleeper in a train before. We didn't have planes in those days in New Zealand, of course, to fly. We had to take the overnight limited. We got to Palmy about 5 o'clock in the morning and sort of got to the hotel. I think we walked to the hotel, had breakfast, and then turned up at the ground, at the showgrounds, for our one and only sort of head out before the trial next day. And we were there. I hadn't met Colin Meads. I hadn't met hardly any of them except Mackie and Walker and a couple. And there was Tree. We all sort of gathered in a huddle and we were waiting for the words of wisdom from the great man. And he said, the first thing he said was, he looked straight in the eye and said, Thorny, we've heard a lot about you. You better produce the goods, son.
No pressure there. Okay, now, turbulent week in the US last week, of course, with Trump appearing to be sort of sympathetic towards the cause, if you can call it a cause, of white supremacists, neo-Nazis, those kinds of cool people. What did Jack make of all of that?
This guy's name was George Dawson. He was an African-American man who grew up in Texas, the poor grandson of a slave. As a kid, he picked cotton and he worked on the family farm and he never went to school. He grew up with Jim Crow laws and all the oppression and humiliation of segregation. But just before his 100th birthday, George Dawson started going to school. It was during the Clinton presidency, and he became a bit of a celebrity at the time in the US. You know, a centurion proving it wasn't ever too late to learn how to read. Much of his story, much of this book, reflected on race in America. After all, if George Dawson had been a white kid, he would never have missed out on an education. I think the book was written in the late 90s, and when I finished, I looked George Dawson up online. He died in the year 2000, or maybe at the start of 2001, and at first I sort of felt a bit sad that he hadn't made it to see Barack Obama become president, just what that moment might have meant for him. But then I also felt good. I felt good that this incredible man hadn't made it to see Trump's. The other thing I will leave you with this morning is just a few lines I wrote in an opinion piece last year. It was a couple of days after the election and after 5 years in the States, I had decided to move home. I don't fear Trump's presidency, I wrote at the time, so much as I lament what it represents. For me, it represents a rejection of America's single greatest quality, diversity. And for that, I'm very sad. I watched Trump this week. I watched him respond to Charlottesville. And I felt just the same again.
Yes, our hosts were certainly in a philosophical mood after the week's events. Not just Jack Tame, but Andrew Dickens as well.
This should remind us just how complicated gun control is in America, because they were exercising their right under the Second Amendment of their all-powerful Constitution, which says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state means the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So they were doing what they were constitutionally allowed to do. And they would argue that they were well regulated. And so that's that. It's maybe constitutional, but it's still very confrontational, isn't it? And faced with those militia, was it any wonder that the protesters of the march were wearing motorcycles, helmets, Kevlar, and carrying clubs? Which is why President Trump said, on all sides, they're tooled up, they're carrying clubs. It was just like the Springbok tour. Remember that? Back in 1981, the protesters who faced with batons also wore helmets and carried shields. Anyway, the protesters against the white supremacists, they were doing their constitutional thing as well. They didn't have guns, they had clubs instead. It shows how quickly conflicts of ideas can become militarized and become conflicts of human bodies, particularly in somewhere as complicated as the United States. Anyway, enough of all that. Hate. I want peace, love, and happiness. I thank heavens that New Zealand, while not perfect, does not have the ingrained hatred that we've seen in Barcelona and Charlottesville.
Yeah, that's a message for the rest of the world, really, isn't it? If you need to get away from it all, the harsh realities, come to New Zealand. And then even once you get here, if you need to escape even further, go to a show. Go to see Matilda. Here's the guy who wrote it, Tim Minchin.
I remember seeing your film, Rock and Roll Nerd. At the time, the sense it gave me was that you really craved the... not necessarily fame, but at least kind of an international success. I mean, that was essentially what the film was about.
I guess, but I don't know if I craved it. I was desperate that. It was an interesting time. I was keen to have a career. And yeah, I guess we put all our chips on the table, put all our eggs in one basket. And so when we went to the UK, it was like high pressure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I sort of feel like... my ambition and my desire to be a good person and a family man and to have balance in my life are always competing.
Yeah, because it is kind of a binary dream in some senses, isn't it?
Yeah.
The showbiz thing. It's either you make it big and you're making millions of dollars and you're flying around the world and everyone knows who you are, or you're just like poverty-stricken,
yeah,
eating baked beans out of a can.
I think that's certainly the narrative. I guess there are many, many middle grounds, and I would have been happy writing music for theatre. You know, I like to think if I hadn't have found comedy and sort of broken out properly, I would be living in Melbourne writing music for the Malthouse and MTC and acting.
Which is kind of a linear career path.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
I find it a bit depressing that I will be eating baked beans out of a can today. When baked beans come out of a can... Is there another way to get them? That's sort of what I have to have for lunch at the moment because I've turned into a big fatty and I'm trying to lose weight. Anyway, that's a weird way to finish News Talk ZB, the weekend edition. But I am Glenn ZB. I will see you back here again tomorrow with beans and all.